Thank you, Janine, for singing at both of our services this morning. According to a Fox News story in 2012, winning the lottery doesn't necessarily translate into winning a good life. They quoted or said some of these things. Jack Whitaker, a West Virginia businessman, won $315 million on one ticket in 2002. Short time after that, he was robbed of $545,000 in cash in a strip club. On a more tragic note, in a short time after that, Whitaker's granddaughter and daughter were found dead. Whitaker was also sued by Caesars Atlantic City Casino for bouncing $1.5 million worth of worthless checks. Juan Rodriguez, a New York City parking attendant making less than $30,000 a year in 2004, won $149 million, but he and his wife divorced shortly after that. Billy Bob Harrell was a preacher working as a stock boy at Home Depot in 1997, won $31 million. Only 20 months later, he committed suicide. Jeffrey Dampler in 1996 and his wife won $20 million. It was 9 years later, Dampler was kidnapped and murdered by his sister-in-law and her boyfriend who had targeted him for ransom money. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be an easy life if we have very much. Today we come to the finish of our series where we've been studying in Proverbs called There's an App for That. You know, Proverbs is loaded with so much information, so much wisdom for the daily things in life revealed to us through that for our daily walk. And what we're going to talk about today, it's no different. We're going to spend just about all of our time in the book of Proverbs. And our foundational text today, if you want to turn there and follow along, is Proverbs chapter 30, verses 7 through 9. Proverbs 30, 7 through 9. The writer says this. He says, two things I ask of you, O Lord, do not refuse me before I die. So this is an important thing to this man. He says, just two things, Lord, before my time on this earth is done that I want to ask you. So it's important. Verse 8, he says, keep falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God. Now I want to focus on the second of those two requests. They're both fantastic prayers and requests, but I want to focus today on that second one, where he says, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. That's an unusual prayer, isn't it? A very unusual prayer to pray. Asking for God not to give you too much, but not to give you too little. You know, that would be a tough one to pray, wouldn't it? Because we spend most of our time asking for more of everything from God. But what a relevant prayer for us today. I think back to the very first teen mission trip that we took here from Macedonia. I think it was in 1995. And we went to Mexico. And to be revealed to us to go and see how little those people have and how much we have and to spend time with them and then to come back. And people mean well, but we were met with so many comments of, I bet you're glad to be back home. I bet you're glad to be in air conditioning. I bet you're glad to have your own bed to sleep in. And you don't want to be rude, but you want to say, no, I'm not. I'm not that happy to be back. I'm not glad for all of these things. Because our experience there showed us that these people who have so little were so much happier than we were. They did so much more with so much little. How many times have we prayed for more of something? Probably just about every time we pray. But how many times have we prayed, God, give me less? Don't give me too much. Someone rephrased that question this way. Would you rather be rich and depressed or poor and happy? And I think the way we justify it, somebody else said, well, could I be moderately wealthy and mildly depressed? We're always trying to find that edge. We dream of winning a contest, the lottery, getting that big bonus at work or that new job, finding something in the attic at grandma's house that we can sell on the antique roadshow and make a fortune from. We don't dream of having less, we dream of having more. Would you rather have little or rather have much? Let's look at that question for just a moment. And the truth is, Proverbs speaks about both of those things. So let's look at that first question. What if I had much? What if I had much? You know, there are some advantages to having much. I read this quote this week, says, money can't buy you happiness, but the kids will come visit more often. But seriously, you know, when you do have much, you know, it does enable you to do other things, to do good things for people, to be able to do more. And I know we've all spent our time sometime or another thing. Now, if I was rich, if I won the lottery, or if I got this inheritance from a rich uncle somewhere, you know, I would do these good things. I'd give this thing to someone. I'd do this. And we dream and think about those things. And in reality, throughout the Old Testament, wealth is pictured as a blessing from God, a sign that God is blessing you. So I want to look at four scriptures here if you want to follow along. It's easy to follow. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 and 10 says this, honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine. So we get that picture that if we honor God, he's going to bless us back with those things. More is better. Proverbs 10:22, the blessing of the Lord brings wealth, and he adds no trouble to it. So it's a blessing from the Lord. Proverbs 11:25, a generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. It says a generous man will prosper. So maybe it is better to have much. I mean, maybe it sounds like it. But of course, then the question follows us right behind that. Well, how much is too much? How much is too much? The Bible doesn't say in actual dollars and cents what is too much. But basically, too much is more than what we have. Have you noticed that? We don't think that we have too much, but we'll think somebody else has too much. A survey was taken at a minister's convention, and they asked this group of ministers, can you own a house too big? And they gathered those results, and in part of that, they asked, what size house do you live in? And when they compiled all of the results, it basically came down to, yes, you can own a house too big, and you know how big that house is? Bigger than the one I own. Bigger than the one that I own. I had a man ask me one time who owned multiple vehicles. He had like 5 or 6 cars and trucks. And he asked me, he says, is it a sin for me to own these cars? Is it too extravagant? And I was trying to think how I could tactfully answer that, but I was going to say yes. But he says, but before you answer that, let me tell you this. I never take a vacation, never have. My wife and I don't eat out. And our garden, we give away to the community and give to people who have needs throughout the year. He says, now is it extravagant for me to have those cars? I was going, how can I answer this? Because he really made me think. It's easy to say he's got too much, but we don't think about what we do in our lives sometimes. So it is something to think about. The Bible does not tell us what is too much. I mean, the Bible does tell us what is too much, but not in dollars and cents. And it's simply what the writer of Proverbs said. He said, it's too much when I say, who is the Lord? When I become so independent of God that I have enough that I can say, who is God? I don't need him. I've got food in the cupboard. I've got a car in the garage. I've got a job to go to. I've got people who love me. Who is God? What is he going to do for me that I haven't done for myself? When we become that independent of God and we do not depend on him, then we have too much. And we're not just talking about food dependency here. We're talking about when we make decisions that we do not consult God on. When we make decisions that we do not care how this affects God or God's people. You know, but a case could be made for little as well. What if I had little? What if I didn't have very much, but I had little? What if I lived by a simple means, just enough to pay the bills and put food on the table? You know, we study all the time that the temptation of money and having too much and living in excess and how dangerous that is. And let's be honest, there are times that we do feel guilty for what we have and what we spend and what we do. We read all the time about movie stars and lottery winners and politicians and athletes who have multi-million dollars but then totally ruin their lives because of it. So is it better to have little? I like what Max Lucado said. He says, money can buy you a bed but not sleep, a house but not a home, luxuries but not a life, stuff but not a savior. So maybe it is better to have little, enough to get by and food on the table and to pay your bills. You know, when we go to Proverbs, a case can be made for that too if you want to follow along. In Proverbs 11, it says this, Proverbs 11, 4, wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. So at some point, wealth means nothing. Down in verse 28 of Proverbs 11, whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. Wealth can do only but so much for you. Proverbs 13, 8. A man's riches may ransom his life, but a poor man hears no threat. I think that's kind of interesting. Your money can buy you some things, but he's saying poor man doesn't have to worry about that. He doesn't have to worry about those things. Proverbs 15, 16. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. So, are you completely confused? Do you see an answer to what God says? Is it better to have little or better to have much? There is an answer, and this answer is found in this, the right perspective. What is the right perspective on what you have? How do you view how God or what God has entrusted to you? Now, there are many factors that enter into what you have. Some is the job that you have. Some is the education that you have. Possibly the family that you were born into, where you were born. All of these things, your work ethic, your personality, your interest, all of these things factor into how much wealth you have. But perspective comes into all of those. The Christian scholar Zwingli said this, if you possess something that you cannot give up, then you do not possess it, it possesses you. A lot of truth there. I remember I was with my friends in we were in high school. I couldn't have been any more than 16 years old. And we went into a burger joint and stand in line to get something. And I ran around with some colorful fellas. And Matt was with his big tall guy. And a kid comes walking into the hamburger joint. And you got to remember, this is back in the middle 70s. It's the middle of the 70s. And so he walks in. He couldn't have been 12 years old. And he is a little scrawny, wormy-looking fella and has a cigarette, looks like it's 2 foot long, hanging out of his mouth. And he comes in just trying to be real tough, and he's standing there in line with us. And Matt looks over at him, and he says, hey, are you smoking that cigarette, or is it smoking you? Just totally crushed this kid trying to be tough, you know. We're all laughing at him, you know, and just totally crushed him. But it's that question. When it comes to possessions, do you own the possessions or the possessions owning you? Are they driving your life? We can all identify with that, I believe. Howard Hendricks, another Christian writer and scholar, tells of a family that he knew that was very well off financially, grew up in a family that was very, very well off. And they were asked, how did you come out of that background and not be consumed by materialism? And they said this, they said, our parents taught us that everything in our home, everything in our house was either an idol or a tool. An idol or a tool. That's a good question. That's a good way to look at it. So it is with money. It's either something that we worship, something that we want, or it's a tool that we use to bless others. In a Newsweek survey, it was asked, how much money would you need to be content? How much money would you need to be content? When they compiled the survey, it came out to this. Didn't matter how much you were making, you needed twice as much of what you were making to be content. If you made $40,000 a year, you came out to, if I made 80, everything would be all right. If you made 300,000, if I had $600,000 a year, then it would be all right. I'd be content. So you see, it doesn't matter how much it was. It was a desire for more. Ecclesiastes 5:10 says it best for us. It says, whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. Now, before we think this is just decorated to those rich people, you can have problems with this at no matter what income level you're at. You can love money if you're working a minimum wage job. You can love money too much there. But you can also be very generous and have very little. I go back in my mind once again to the Mexico trips that we took, especially those first years. And I know Eric can identify with this since he's been to India on a trip as well, that when you go to these places and go into the homes of these people who have absolutely nothing compared to what you have, they want to show you the best. They want to give you the best. When it's time to eat a meal, they pull out the very best that they have. And you want to say to them, no, don't use that on me. You don't have an idea what's waiting for me at home. Don't spend your best on me. But they want to. They want to be generous. They want to show you your best. You see, it doesn't matter if you have little or if you have a lot. God is concerned with your priorities and your perspective on those things and on Him. He wants you to be satisfied and content with what you have. He wants you to be armed for battle with what He has blessed you with. Paul said it best in Philippians 4, verses 12 and 13. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through Him who gives me strength. Paul found the answer. You see, the problems of those who have little and the problems of those who have much may be very different. But we are to be a blessing. We are blessed to bless others. Whether we have little or we have a lot, we are blessed to bless others. So if you've been blessed financially, and let me more ahead and make this clear here. If a person living in the United States of America, living on welfare, is better off than 95% of the people living in an underdeveloped country, if you're living on welfare in America, you are better off financially than 95% of the world's population living in an underdeveloped country. So I think it's pretty clear to say, I'm speaking to every person in this room, when I say if you've been blessed financially, you should be a blessing to others. And some of the nations, particularly of Africa, the AIDS epidemic is so extreme that 20 to 25% of some of these countries, some of the city, urban populations, are infected with AIDS or HIV. That would mean that 25% of the people in this room have AIDS or HIV. Every Sunday we'd come together, that's the way it would be. It's an extreme problem. Because it's such a large problem in some of these countries, many of the men, the husbands, the fathers, have already died from AIDS. Many of the women, these women are left to raise families. Four or five children left behind with no provider. And in a world where women have an extremely difficult time finding work, if there is any work, they live in extreme poverty. It's nothing to go days with nothing to eat. Their children eat nothing. And sometimes in those situations, a man will approach a woman like that and offer her money for sex, unprotected sex. And see, what cries out in your mind right then is the same thing that cries out in my mind. No way. Not that I know what I know as a Christian, and not with the possibility of contracting AIDS and dying. But doctors and missionaries who work in those situations and those scenes say that's not what enters into a mother's mind. She's not concerned about, is it morally right or wrong? She's not concerned about the possibility that she may get AIDS and die in 5 years. She's faced with the reality that she's looking at four hungry children who'll die next week if she doesn't feed them. I'm not condoning sex outside of marriage. I'm not condoning the situation, but what I am saying, when you live in a situation of hopelessness, that there's no light of Christ there, you see no other way out, that it becomes very, very complicated. And it adds a whole new meaning to the prayer, "Give us today our daily bread." You know, sometimes, and I've met Christians, and I'm not criticizing, I don't agree with their view sometimes, that they will say, you know, we don't need to be so interested in the material, reaching out to the poor of this world in material ways, because God is spirit and God is interested in the soul, so the material doesn't matter, the physical doesn't matter. And it's true, God is interested in the soul. But just by the story I've told you, that can be repeated millions of times, you see how important it is to reach out to the needs of people like that so that they can have another day to live, to hear the story of Christ. That they can live and not have to say when a man approaches them like that, or to be thought to have to steal to feed their children, that no, I know Christ and I know to trust Him. That's why it's so important that we reach out to people like that in material ways so that we can carry the gospel-saving message of Jesus Christ. That's why I like last Christmas when at Christmas you raised $25,000 and made 100,000 meals to be sent to different places of the world. It was more than just some rice and filler and beans. It was extending the life of someone so that they could hear about Jesus Christ, that they could break a cycle like what I've described to you. So what do we do? What do we do today? Well, I think we ought to be concerned about short-term missions. Some of you, if you have this burn in your heart, if you feel like that you need to know more about this, and I think you ought to look into going on a short-term mission. There could be somebody in this church right now that needs to be a missionary and needs to explore that, about carrying this to the world. We need to think about starting to give above and beyond what we give so that we can be a blessing. There are some others here who need to just simply start giving, because you're not, and become a blessing to other people. There's some of us who need to start praying every day, the Proverbs 30, verse 8 and 9. Lord, hear this prayer. Don't give me too much. Just give me enough. Start to pray that way. There's others of us who just need to start opening our eyes to what's around us. Open your eyes to what's going on around us in our little part of the world and in the world in the whole big scheme, and see what needs are out there. But here's the question that we need to close with today. Here's the question. Would you still be content with God if? Would you still be content with God if you were born in another country, an underdeveloped country, not the United States of America? Would you still be content with God if you slept on the mat in the corner of a room where everybody else slept instead of sleeping in your room, in your bed? Would you still be content with God if that house that you did live in was one room? Would you be content with God if your spouse came home and infected you with the AIDS virus? Would you be content with God? Would you be content with God if you had to walk everywhere that you went, and you had to walk miles every day just to get drinking water? Would you be content with God? That is the question, isn't it? Please don't ignore this. Please don't just push this away like a commercial that we see on television, then move on to what we always do. But think about it like Jesus talks about when he encountered the young man. He said, what do I have to do to inherit eternal life? That man says, I've obeyed all the commandments. Jesus gets right to the matter because he knows he's wealthy and he loves money. He says, sell everything you have, give to the poor, come follow me. Says the man walked away sad because he was a man of great wealth. And that's when Jesus said, it's easier for a rich man, easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. And the disciples say this, go, what? What? Then who can go to heaven? Who can make it? And that's when Jesus answered this way. With man, this is impossible, but not with God. All things are possible with him, with God. Now, I don't know where you're at right now. I don't know where you're at financially. I don't know where you're at where you care with your possessions. I don't know where you're at in your contentment with God. I don't know where you're at in giving your life to God. But if it seems impossible wherever you're at and you can't get to where God would have you to be, don't discount God's power. Don't discount what God can do. Listen to what he says. He said, with man, this is impossible. With God, all things are possible. You give your life to him, and you give him even control of your possessions, and you'll see what God can do. We're going to stand together, and we're going to sing, and if there is a decision here to be made, I pray you will not delay that you'll make it today. Let's stand together and sing.